This is the Jeff Horovitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All right, a busy Thursday. I've got stuff on drones in Tucson, a big development in Williams, gambling in Arizona, plus the filibuster. The Jeff Horovitz Show starts now. Tremendous pressure on Senator Sinema and West Virginia Senator Manchin to end the filibuster. I'm going to talk about that today. Plus, I've got some information on drones, got some things on sports betting here in Arizona, and much, much more. A big news update here for the first segment. Also, we've got Mark Howitt coming up, a horrible accident that happened regarding bicyclists in Flagstaff. Someone ran a red light. At least one person was killed. And Mark Howitt, who's an avid bicyclist, is going to tell us about this story and what's going on in bike safety. Plus, a big update on, as you know, he's a contractor. Costs of building. We talk about that a lot. He knows what he's talking about in that regard. And we're going to get into more about Biden pushing to double the tariff for lumber coming out of Canada, which we desperately need now. We need a bigger supply of lumber to help bring down the cost of the building material. Simple supply and demand here. So Mark Howitt will join me. Plus, I'm trying to get the mayor of Williams back on the program, Mayor John Moore, regarding a big development that may be happening in Williams, 1,000-plus homes, and possibly a theme park coming to Northern Arizona. What's it entail? We'll see if we can get the mayor on the line here in just a little bit. Speaking of on the line, I'd love to hear from you. The Just Wireless listener line. Today, I'm going to look for your text messages, and I appreciate the calls yesterday during Open Line Wednesday, but I'd love to get some text comments from you. Anything you want to talk about, I'll try to work in throughout the program. So go ahead and text, or you can call. I'd love to see your text messages. 877-971-3971. 877-971-3971. Go ahead and get those in. Start getting those in now, and we'll work through them as best we can. Let's see here. So pressure mounting on Senator Sinema to end the filibuster. I heard that Biden took a swipe, and according to this Fortune article, Biden takes rare swipe at Manchin and Sinema as Senate nears filibuster fight. And I also got a text. I've been getting all these political text messages already. Have you gotten that as well? They're already ramping up. I told you that these races are already heating up. Here we're about, what, a year and a half or so out from the election. We talked yesterday with former mayor of Flagstaff, Jerry Neighbors, about the upcoming Arizona governor's race, and multiple people have gotten in that race. But I'm already getting messages. Here it is. I don't know who this is from. Here, well, they called me Elizabeth in this text. Your Second Amendment rights are at stake. Tell Senators Sinema and Kelly to reject Joe Biden's ATF nominee. Okay, I'd agree with that. But then I also got this one from, they just called me Michael. Hi, Michael. This is Stephanie with Common Cause. The For the People Act, the comprehensive bill on voting rights and rooting dark money out of politics, is going to be voted on in the Senate this month. However, it will not pass unless your senator calls to end the filibuster, referring to Senator Sinema. Here we go. Which Senator Sinema has yet to do? Can you give their office a call right now and ask them to eliminate the filibuster? Reply yes to call. So I encourage you to continue to contact. Senator Kelly's probably a lost cause. But Senator Sinema has shown an independent streak in that she was not willing to end the filibuster, which if you end the filibuster, the Democrats, who have a super slim majority, will be able to vote through just about whatever they want, including this For the People Act, which is a load of crap. The For the People Act is this voting bill, SR1, HR1, which basically nationalizes our elections, takes away states' rights, same-day registration, all this stuff that I have serious concerns with, and I think many of you do as well. That'll get passed, probably a $15 an hour national minimum wage, which makes no sense for some places. Talk to the folks in Flagstaff who has the state's highest minimum wage and one of the nation's highest minimum wage about what this is doing to the costs of goods and services. It's going way up. So it makes no sense to get that. Plus gun rights issues. If you like your Second Amendment, like that other text I got, You don't want an end to the filibuster because they'll start banning things. They'll start assaulting the Second Amendment, as they already are, and many other things. Green New Deal. The Green New Deal will get passed. Instead of having it just in Flagstaff, you know, Flagstaff's looking at pushing their version of the Green New Deal and voting on it here in a couple weeks. The Senate and the House, and they'll send it over to Biden, will vote on the Green New Deal for the nation. So I highly encourage you to connect with Senator Sinema, to send her a message. You can look her up, just Google or whatever the heck you use, Senator Sinema, and it usually pops up first thing, her email address and or her office in Phoenix, the phone number. I encourage you to call and support her stance on not ending the filibuster, because according to this Fortune article, Biden complained of media commentators pinning legislative gridlock on him, pointing to narrow majorities in the House and the Senate and two senators who, quote, vote more with my Republican friends. He's obviously referring to Sinema and Manchin. Biden said that June, which Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has signaled will be devoted in part to House-passed bills on gun control, LGBT rights, and election reform, should be a month of action on Capitol Hill. So don't underestimate the pressure that senators like Sinema and Manchin are receiving, and you got to counter that. That's all I can say on this, or else you're gonna see more of your rights taken away. Love your comments. Text your comments on that one, 877-971-3971. We've been talking a lot about, and I mentioned this yesterday with former Flagstaff Mayor Jerry Neighbors, about how vulnerable we are in a lot of regards as more and more technology evolves and more things become automated and everything's online. We see the meatpacking issue that's happened. The largest meat producer or processor, I should say, in the country got the ransomware issue. I believe they've started processing meat once again. They account for, what, 22% or something like that of America's meat processing. So they finally got, they're back at it, but they're saying this ransomware is coming from Russia. I don't know. I'm just seeing what they're reporting. They say it's coming from Russia. I don't know where it's coming from. Be a little Billy in the basement somewhere, but probably not. But this is becoming more and more of a problem. And I'm not against technology, of course. I'm doing this show because of technology. You should see the gear we have and how we're able to connect from anywhere and do amazing things. And our lives are much easier. We're able to work at home if we need to. If there's, the past year, we've learned that and so much more. But there has to be some balance here. And we've got to get serious about securing our networks and our industry and our country. And having I mentioned this yesterday, having our meat processed by, one company, a quarter of our meat, it raises concerns. I'm going to get to that in a little bit because some of you have commented on my comments about trying to maybe get some smaller companies so we're not so centralized in just a few different processors. Doesn't mean I'm against big companies. I don't care if you have a big company, but as a consumer, you may want to start making choices where you maybe support some more of the local and regional places that do different kinds of work to try to diversify where all these things are and how centralized they are. But anyway, there's another issue, and it has to do with drones that I found interesting. And this is an article from thedrive.com. New details emerge on the highly modified drone that outran police helicopters over Tucson. The drone was first detected near an energy storage facility across from Davis-Montham Air Force Base before evading two pursuing law enforcement helicopters. This thing outran the helicopters. According to reports, on the evening of February 9th, 2021, around 10:30 p.m. local time, helicopter belonging to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP for short, encountered what has been described by KOLD's Dan Maries, who interviewed an FBI agent assigned to the case, as a highly modified drone in controlled airspace. Another helicopter operated by the Tucson Police Department's Air Support Unit was called in to help track and potentially identify the drone alongside the one from CBP, but the drone was able to evade them both and remain unidentified. Shortly after the incident was disclosed, the FBI released a statement asking for help from the public regarding any information related to the encounter. Now, this follows a drone incident or incursion that happened over, this was in 2019, that happened over the Palo Verde nuclear power plant. that they were never able to resolve and figure out where those came from. I read on in this article, a lot of drug cartels are actually using drones to drop drugs over the border. So you load up a supply and you drop it or whatever, and someone comes picks it up. Pretty cheap way to do it. And who's going to get caught other than the drone may get shot down or impounded or something or whatever. But anyway, this was 50 miles north of the border over Davis-Montham Air Force Base in the Tucson Airport's restricted airspace. And it was hovering over a fuel depot. Another thing to worry about here with tech. I love drones. I mean, I've seen drones that cost a few hundred dollars that do amazing things. You've got thousands of dollars, which the case on this one must be that it was a highly sophisticated, expensive drone. They don't know who it was, and they don't know what they're looking for. So we've got to beef up our security when it comes to drones. Look, I doubt a drone could do something to the Palo Verde nuclear power plant. I've been in there before, and it's a very secure facility, and it would be pretty hard to do something there. But I don't know, over a fuel depot, how much would it take? Drug cartels. So I got another article here from Yahoo. Drones and the cartels. This is out of Kentucky. It began as a routine operation. Mexican police were clearing blockades placed by organized crime groups in a western Mexico town that has become a battleground for drug cartels. Suddenly, authorities said a drone flew over, dropping a gunpowder bomb and wounded two members of the state police force in the arms and legs. The attack in April underscored an emerging danger in the international fight against illegal drugs, weaponized drones. The bloody and powerful Jalisco New Generation Cartel, or CJNG, and its rival Carteles Unidos, sorry, my Spanish is awful, have upgraded their arsenals using drones to bomb enemies, posing a growing threat to Mexican and U.S. citizens and allowing more drugs to flow into the U.S. Drones are part of the cartel's larger strategy to arm themselves like rogue militaries. And yeah, they are armed militaries down there. And the drug cartels are even using submarines to get the drugs in and everything. So anyway, something to continue to watch for and for our so-called representatives to figure out how to counteract two big things. The growing threat in cybersecurity, ransomware, things like that. And then they're getting paid in cryptos and other sources of funds. And this issue with drones, that's going to continue to be a bigger and bigger problem as the technology advances. Anyway, I wanted to share that with you. I'd love your thoughts. Go ahead and text them in. I'm going to try to work your text messages, text comments in throughout the program. And thank you for all the comments that you always leave. I appreciate all of them. Text or call 877-971-3971, 877-971-3971. And thank you to Just Wireless for supporting the text and listener line. You can check out my friends at Just Wireless, two locations in the Flagstaff area. There's the Milton Avenue location. Also, there's the location across from the Flagstaff Mall where they have their drive-through drop-off service. And actually, my mother-in-law dropped off an older iPhone, and she wanted me to give a shout-out. Or she told me she just went there because she heard heard about it on the show. I've taken my phone there to get repaired. They fixed her battery, put a new battery in, and fixed one of those ports where you can connect it to another device or charge it, the charging port. They did all that for a very low price in a couple hours. So Just Wireless, across from the Flagstaff Mall, drive-in location. Go check them out. Tell them I sent you as well. All right, text the Just Wireless listener on 877-971-3971. Still to come. Mark Howitt joins us on this tariff issue, lumber prices, plus this horrible bike accident that happened where someone ran a red light and at least one person died in Flagstaff, others injured. We're going to talk about that as well. Hang tight. Back in a minute. All Hey, welcome back. A couple text messages coming up I'll try to get to. And remember, I'm looking for your text comments today on the Just Wireless listener line and text line. Please get those in as soon as possible. 877-971-3971. Love to hear from you. 877-971-3971. Arizona Veterans American flag set on fire outside of home before Memorial Day weekend. Article here from Fox News. Someone appeared to set fire to an American flag ahead of Memorial Day weekend outside the home of a veteran who served in Afghanistan, a video shows. Adam Douglas, who last served in Afghanistan as a captain in 2019, returned to his home in Tempe to celebrate Memorial Day weekend, but noticed the American flag outside his home was gone. Unreal. Upon checking his doorbell camera, I guess those things that do have a use. I've just been a little skeptical of those things. Video taken days earlier on May 26 shows a man touching the flag before picking up what appears to be a lighter. Douglas told Fox 10 Phoenix he heard several clicks from the lighter trying to ignite as the man attempted to light the flag on fire. Unbelievable. And I told you the story of the, I think it was in California off the top of my head, at a memorial cemetery and a veteran cemetery, and they, someone stole one of the large, the large American flag there. Unbelievable. What is wrong with people? Could you imagine? I mean, what has to be miswired in your head to do something like that? Let's get to a text message. You can text the Just Wireless listener and text line 877-971-3971. And don't forget, I got Mark Howitt coming up on the this bike incident that left one person dead, one bicyclist, and others injured in Flagstaff. We're going to talk about that and bike safety. We're going to talk about the lumber tariffs as well because he's a contractor, so stick around for that. Plus, I'm trying to get on the phone here today. I hope we can still get him, Mayor John Moore of Williams, regarding this very big new development in Williams and possibly a theme park, so stick around for that as well. Jeff, you sound like you want the government to limit businesses with your comments on the size of the meat packers. This is from yesterday's show. You can't have it both ways, Kevin Prescott. No, I wasn't calling for the government to break up the meat packers. On the show with Jerry Neighbors, former mayor of Flagstaff, on Wednesday, on Open Line Wednesday, I kind of went off on a stream of conscious thought type of thing, which happens sometimes on live radio, where I am very concerned with, as I said last segment, the consolidation of some of our industries by so few. And I had no idea that the beef, at least this is for beef, you had this company that owns or processes something like 20-22% of America's beef, just one company. And there was actually three companies that really did like almost 75% of America's beef processing, just three big companies. And then the other 25% just said other in this chart. I assume there's independents in there as well. I get concerned about America's strategic position. It's a national security issue, really, when hackers can supposedly shut down an industry and threaten a food supply. It's more food for thought. We better start thinking about this stuff and taking it seriously. This is a lot more of a risk to our country than a lot of other issues, I think. Cybersecurity. Then I was talking about these drones and things where people are flying it over in, if you just joined us, Southern Arizona over Davis-Montham Air Force Base, some drone that outran two helicopters, according to this report. It was hovering over a gas depot, one of those big, you know, storage tanks. That's concerning, right? Especially when you hear about Mexican drug cartels using drones to drop explosives on Mexican army, Mexican anti-drug task force folks. So it's a concern. We better wake up, just like we better wake up with threats to our electric grid. Remember what happened in Texas? I mean, if haven't we learned anything this past year? I mean, should have been the biggest wake-up call for people to have some kind of security when it comes to their food, some kind of storage, some kind of extra. I know these gas cans are ridiculous. I hate them. These new gas cans, I talk about them all the time. It's a perfect example of dumb things government does. These cans that are sealed up and they don't have a vent port anymore. They explode if they're in the sun when you open them. I mean, they explode gas particles all over the place on you, and then they don't pour right. But anyway, you might want to go buy one of those 5-gallon you know, jugs wherever and have a little bit because we saw a gas pipeline under ransomware. And I had my brother-in-law from North Carolina talking about the gas lines that were in North Carolina. We ran out of toilet paper this year. We're having problems getting chips, not the kind you eat, although that may happen. Although the bag you're going to buy is going to be smaller. There'll be more air in the bag because of shortages, because of rising costs, because of production problems. Hey, there's all these problems compounding, so I can't believe people aren't getting more prepared for the essentials in their life. I'm not some crazy right-wing prepper here, but I guess I'm a prepper because I've stepped up the amount that I like to stock up after what we've seen this past year. You never know. So my point being, I'm not saying the government needs to come in and break up this meat packer that controls 22% of the processing in the country. What I wanted to say, and I don't know if I articulated this well yesterday, is maybe we as consumers need to start supporting some of the more local and regional processors. And I don't know, they still have, I know there's some throughout Northern Arizona where you can go to more of a locally owned or regional butcher to get stuff done. I mean, we used to do that and we were just fine. So maybe we as consumers, Kevin, want to start doing that and want to start supporting these folks. I almost bought last year, and I was talking with former Coconino County Board of Supervisor Jim Parks, who's been in the cattle industry and all that for a long time in Northern Arizona. I almost bought one of those. You can buy a cow or you can buy a half cow or whatever. There's ranches throughout Arizona that you can do that. Maybe that's a good thing, and maybe find somebody to split up one cow among four families just so you're not relying on these big centralized systems anymore. I'm not against the technology. I'm not against a company getting big if it's, you know, if that's the way it goes. But I'm just saying as a point of national security, we might want to be a lot more careful, and as consumers, we have some power to actually do that stuff. All right, big development in Williams. Like I said, I'm going to try to get Mayor John Moore on here in just a little bit, still working the phones to connect with him. But let me give you the basics here. And we talked about this yesterday, how Arizona's growing a lot. And Arizona is seeing a larger share of manufacturing jobs, especially high-tech jobs, and companies relocating to mostly the Phoenix area. And the jobs that traditionally were going to the Southeast for a long time and other places, and the manufacturing facilities are coming to Arizona. Arizona's growing. So we posed a question yesterday, and if you want to chime in on this and text us, is this a good thing? Or in 20 years, did we become New Jersey where people are fleeing and we're getting high tax and it grew too much? I don't know. What's the balance? I'd love to hear from you, 877-971-3971. But there's a big development going on in Williams, or at least proposed. 500-acre parcel just north of Williams. And it might start building here in 2022. It's something like the Arizona Daily Sun was reporting from the people involved in this, maybe like a $20 million land deal. It's kind of uncertain, but a sizable chunk of money. 1,000 new residential units over maybe 15 years. And that's big for a lot of communities, but especially for Williams. And the big one here is, and I've heard this for decades, and we'll like I said, we're working on getting Mayor John Moore back on the program. Maybe a theme park called Jackalope. It's a funny one. Jackalope Junction may be developed as well on some of the 500 acres. Possible attractions may even include like a water park or something like that. I'm actually surprised. It looks like, did the Aquaplex finally open in Flagstaff? I stopped by the Camp Verde pool in the other day, and they were finally, they're open now. They have an outdoor pool there, a little slide, pretty cool. A lot of communities have these. Flagstaff has the only real water park, if you can even call it that, is the Flagstaff Aquaplex. They were closed for like a year. I think they're finally opening. I don't know if you can swim, though. I mean, why would you want kids to swim? So much chlorine in the air. I don't think there's ever much risk of getting COVID in those pools. Your eyes burn. But they have a couple slides there. But I'm kind of surprised with the tourism in Northern Arizona that there isn't more like water parks for the summer and things like that. We'll see if this happens in Williams. Williams has positioned themselves as a great gateway to the Grand Canyon and so many tourists. And they did such a great job this past year of staying open and being as normal as possible. Their school also, another shout out to Williams, went to back to in-person education first. As soon as the governor said kids don't need to wear masks anymore, they took them off. They said, we're done. That day, kids threw their mask away. They probably were burning them stuff. So anyway, I'm surprised there isn't some water parks in northern Arizona, some small ones. Most communities have them. I was up at Rapid City, South Dakota last year. During the height of the pandemic, by the way, we were up there at a water park, a nice little water park there. It was indoors. It was fully occupied, no social distancing. This was right when everything was spiking. So they have them. So communities of the size of Flagstaff and smaller have these things. But anyway, big development. What do you think? Especially if you're in the Williams area. Are you into this? Is this a good thing, bad thing? Love to hear from you. Text or call the Just Wireless listener and text line, 877-971-3971. 877-971-3971. All right, still to come. I've got some sports issues as far as getting back to full capacity sports in Arizona. I've also got some sports betting is about to happen. Both the, what is that called? The fantasy sports betting, but actual sports betting. I've got updates on that as well. Plus Mark Howitt's going to join us to talk about this, horrible bike incident where someone ran a red light in Flagstaff. One bicyclist was killed. Others were injured. We're going to talk about this incident, bike safety, which he's an avid bicyclist, but then we're also going to get into, since he's a contractor, the tariffs that are being proposed by President Joe Biden on lumber. Talk about bad timing. Hang tight. Back in a minute. Welcome back. I'm still working on getting some of your text messages, so keep those coming. We'll do that towards the end of the show in the 5 o'clock hour, 877-971-3971. And Mark Howitt is here in the studio with me. And Mark, how you doing?
Doing great. Glad to be back in the studio.
I managed to book two time slots at the same time. So we have Victor Rich is coming up here in just a second from the Goldwater Institute.
I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. So we'll talk with him. You and I, we'll hit on maybe the end of this segment, but into the 5 o'clock hour, the bike incident that happened where there's a fatality in Flagstaff. So some of the bike safety issues, but you got some stuff from the city, I think, on the regional plan. I get into your Idaho stop again as well.
That's right. A lot of bike stuff going on.
Yeah.
We did have that terrible accident over the weekend.
Yeah, it was bad. And then I want to get into the tariffs being proposed. Mark is in the construction industry, and lumber prices went up just a little bit. So let's let's throw some tariffs on top of that, according to Biden. So I'll get your take on that. But let's welcome back to the program from the Goldwater Institute, Victor Riches. Victor, hey, how you doing?
Hey, Jeff, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You want to talk about tariffs? I know you probably have a lot to say about that, right? But we'll stay on topic here. Have you bought a 2x4 lately?
Not lately.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy. All right. So Victor, I had on, and you just had an op-ed that came out regarding the proposal that's being thrown around at the Arizona legislature, and I believe by Governor Ducey as well. This is one of Governor Ducey's good proposals regarding a huge tax cut. I had on Majority Leader Representative Ben Thoma last week on this before the session kind of imploded, I guess you'd say, and they went on recess till June 10th. But you're a big advocate for this, I guess, flat tax and this issue of lowering taxes in Arizona. Why don't you give us the nuts and bolts of how you see it and what the proposal is?
Sure, absolutely. Well, the tax proposal, in a nutshell, the really crown jewel component of it is to actually take Arizona's tax brackets, collapse them into one bracket, and it'd be one very low flat tax. So it'd be a 2.5% flat tax. So that would be across the board. That would mean that everyone in the state would, in fact, get a tax break. And one of the things I like to stress to folks, the reason why this type of measure really is important for the state as we move forward, we really do need to make sure that we're able to attract job creators, high net worth individuals, so we can actually attract these types of folks to Arizona. And when you look right now at our overall tax burden in the state, we're really we're kind of in the middle of the pack compared to most states. And when you look at our specific bordering states, places like Utah, New Mexico, Colorado, of course, Nevada, we really don't have any tax advantage over those states. And I think you could argue with a state like Nevada that we have a disadvantage. And then when you think about Texas, of course, we're at a big disadvantage. And so I think Arizona's tax code as a whole has been pretty stagnant over the last number of years. And in the meantime, we've seen the state grow exponentially. As you guys know, and that we have about 1 million new people now than we did 10 years ago. It continues to grow. The growth projections are still through the roof over the next few years. And we're just at a point where we need to have a tax system that is actually competitive with the rest of the country. And the reality is income taxes are the best taxes to go in and do as much as we possible can to eliminate them. Even during recessionary periods, we've seen that the income tax is pretty unreliable revenue source. Sales taxes are much better revenue source. And so not only is it more fair for taxpayers across the board, but also, frankly, makes more sense just from a budgeting standpoint for the state.
Victor, I think you summed it up pretty good there. I called Arizona yesterday, Mark, in the mushy middle. I said, hey, yeah, we've got sales tax, we've got property tax, we've got income, we've got everything. So it's like, what's the advantage of coming into Arizona? Mark, you're in business. We're in the middle, and it's not always the best place to be. We're like Kmart.
Yeah, we even have a use tax here in the state.
It's, yeah,
all kinds of taxes. The big concern I'm worried about is a lot of the other taxes are regressive taxes. They hit the lower income brackets harder. Property tax, sales tax, all these type of taxes. You have to pay them whether you have an income or not.
When you go out to the store to buy something other than, well, some places actually, Victor, we talked about this, have a food tax, a grocery tax, which I think is awful. I've talked to the mayor of Cottonwood and Prescott about that one before on the program. Yeah. But what do you say to that? Like that, playing the devil's advocate here, you know, hey, we're going to go to something that affects people's, like based more on sales tax versus the income tax side. Thoughts on that?
Well, one of the nice things about this proposal, and this is something that we really fought for over at Goldwater Institute, is that there was talk in the early stages when this proposal was being developed of actually increasing the sales tax to sort of offset some of the income tax cuts. And we made, I think, a very compelling case, and others did as well, that look, when you're in a situation like Arizona is in, where you're sitting on a $4 billion surplus, you just can't do that. It borders on being immoral to go down that type of road. And so one of the great things about this proposal is it doesn't increase the sales tax. And I would certainly agree. I think the state sales tax is on the high end when you compare it with other states. So I think that's another area of taxation that could be looked at a little further down the road. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about this tax is there are no tax increases associated with it. It's an actual, legitimate, pure tax cut. And it is a tax cut that impacts everyone, middle income, lower income, higher income. Everyone does get impacted by this in a beneficial way.
So what happened, Victor, and I've had on, Senator Kelly Townsend, maybe it was yesterday, the day before. What happened with the legislature? This is really broken down. And to paint a picture here, the Republicans have a very slim majority, 16 to 14 in the Senate, 31 to 29 in the House. There's, as far as I can tell, no Democrat support for this thing. And several Republicans peeled off. And then the leadership said, hey, we're taking a break. The governor didn't like that. I've criticized the veto nuclear bomb that happened because there were some good bills in there. But it seems like there's some turmoil, and this isn't looking good. Your thoughts?
Well, the discussions that I've been having with legislative folks and folks from the governor's office, I don't think we're that far off. There are some members that don't like the flat tax component, but I think they're feeling more and more comfortable with it. I'll be honest with you. I think if the legislature and what happened at the legislature, a number of people had vacation plans that they really should have never made. You know, my own background is I spent 20 years working out of the Capitol, and we had a very strict rule.
Yeah.
You don't make vacation plans.
Well, you know how this goes. Typically, the session ends by the end of May, but you don't know. It can go on for a long time. And I have heard from several of my friends in the legislature, as you're hearing, Victor, that the plane tickets were booked, maybe one even to Hawaii, and it was set. And, hey, we can't come to agreement. I'm going to go on vacation. And I think that's where the governor got mad as well. I can't elaborate more than that, but that's the gist of it.
No, that's the general impression I've gotten. I mean, I'm not out there anymore. I'm not in those,
the trenches,
internal discussion.
Yeah.
But that's definitely the impression I've gotten. Sure. And I've talked to some rank and file members that were certainly upset with this idea that folks were going to keep vacation plans when they're literally, they're not even in the middle of budget negotiations. They're at the back end of budget negotiations. So I do think that there's still a very, very good chance to get the flat tax passed. Like I said, I do know there's a couple of members that are Republican members that do have concerns. And you are certainly right. There's the probability of any Democrats coming on the budget is slim, but that has always been the case.
Yeah.
There's nothing new about that. And so it probably will require all the Republicans, but I think at the end of the day, they will all get there. And I always like to remind people, Republicans do not lose office by voting for tax cuts. That has never happened, and it's certainly not going to happen off of this package.
Good point there. Good point.
Victor, I had a quick question. So any tax increase in Arizona has to go to the voters. The legislature can't just do that. Does this thing have to go to the voters, or can the legislature do this by themselves?
As a tax decrease. Do tax decreases have to go to the, good question, to the voters?
Neither has to go to the voters. That is, the legislature can pass tax increases and they can pass tax decreases. But they can only pass increases off of a supermajority. So they have to get 2/3 of the members to pass the tax increase, which is very difficult, bordering on almost impossible.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why when they have done tax increases, and there have been a couple over the years, they usually do send them to the voters, not because they necessarily have to, but because then it's kind of a way of passing the buck from the legislature to the voters. But technically, the legislature could have passed tax increases, but they need a 2/3.
And folks, you're talking with Victor Riches with the Goldwater Institute, goldwaterinstitute.org. Check it out. Go to their site. They do a lot of work like this. Proposition 208. How are we getting around the Prop 208 is the so-called wealth tax. I think it was like 4.5%. And I know there's something in this proposed legislation to offset that, because in order to not do the Prop 208 4.5% on those making higher earnings, supposedly, they had to do something to offset that, because you would have to go back to the voters. What's going on there? Can you give us that 30,000 foot here?
Sure. Yeah. When the voters passed Prop 208, which as you know, is of course being challenged right now. So if it was to stay in place, if the Supreme Court rules that it's constitutional and it stays in place, the Prop 208 monies would still exist. And the way they did it was they made a surcharge on top of the then existing highest rate. And so the surcharge would still be there. It would be off of the 2.5% instead of 4.5%. So that surcharge would still exist. There's also some general fund backfill involved with that to make up any difference. But the Prop 208 dollars would still exist under this proposal. It's just that no one in the state would be getting taxed at 8.5%. The highest tax bracket under this proposal would be 4.5%.
Okay, so in essence, it has to be backfilled through the general fund at, say, 4%. Somebody has to be made up for to, unless you're successful in eliminating 208 through litigation, it has to be backfilled.
Well, keep in mind there would still be a 4.5% tax rate for higher income earners. So that difference between the 2.5% and 4.5% would be the Prop 208 dollars. So they would still exist. It just wouldn't exist off of a 4.5% maximum tax rate. It would exist off of a 2.5% maximum tax rate. So it's really, I've seen some stories where they're talking about how this would take money away from 208. That is not true. The 208 dollars would still exist. It's just saying that the wealthier individuals are not going to be paying that high income tax rate, although they still will be paying an income tax rate if 208 continues to exist. That is about double what everyone else would pay.
Okay. Victor, appreciate the update. Do you think they'll be back by June 10th? And you seem confident that they'll get this tax cut voted in. I know you're not in the trenches there, but do you think this, you're confident this is going to happen?
I think it is a very good chance it will happen. I always hate to put any odds on things. Politics is a crazy game and the legislature is crazy, but I think there's a very good chance it will happen. You know, the clock is ticking. They do have to have a budget done by July 1st.
Yeah.
Now another scenario could be that they don't quite get it done. They do some sort of a continuing resolution and then continue to work on it. But I do think that at the end of the day, there's going to be a very significant tax reform that I think is going to be very important to the state of Arizona.
All right, Victor, appreciate it. Folks, go to goldwaterinstitute.org and check out this op-ed. And Victor, give us any updates you got coming down the line. Love to hear from you again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And Mark, got just a minute or two here, and then we'll continue on into the 5 o'clock hour. It is interesting. It's you've got some interesting scenarios here with this delay in the legislature. Representative Grantham, for example, on the Republican side, and they only have a one seat majority down there. He's in the Air National Guard. He could be called, and I was talking with Senator Kelly Townsend, he could be called up any second. Then all of a sudden they don't have the votes unless they allow some kind of remote type situation. It's not good.
It's not. And, you know, the legislature is supposed to be done legally by sometime in May, if I remember correctly. And so after that, they're extending by special measure.
Yeah, that's what he was saying.
And being called back. Yeah. Which is, you know, they could just let this go till next January and you'd still be okay. I know they want to get it done, but... Yeah.
I'd like a tax cut. I like the number zero.
Oh, I always like a tax cut. I mean,
yeah. But I do get. I think the questions are how they're backfilling it, because right now they're flush with surplus money, I guess you'd say. What happens a couple years down the road?
I think that's phony money. Really, a lot of it's coming from the feds, and you know, really, they need to look at next year's budget and see where are we at next year, because this year has been so weird.
This is an anomaly.
There's a lot of fake money in there. It's that extra surplus may not be there next year.
I don't think it will be. And I don't know. We got to be cautious and prepare for the future, because we don't know what's coming. And you just, if this last year has taught us anything. All right, Mark, let's do this. Next hour, let's talk about this incident that happened in Flagstaff. Horrible bike accident. Someone ran a red light. At least one person was killed and others injured. You've got a bunch of data on biking and avid bicyclists yourself. So we'll talk about that. Plus lumber and tariffs. Good time for more tariffs. Let's make lumber more expensive.
Plus, affordable housing in Flagstaff is already buried, and it's just getting worse.
Yeah. All right, we'll hit on all that. 5:06, folks. Stick around. Back in just a couple minutes.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All right, let's talk with Mark Howard about bikes, lumber, and more, plus get to some of your text message comments. Another hour of the show starts now. Welcome back to another hour of the program. Thanks for continuing to listen. Mark Howard is here with me, frequent guest co-host. He's also... the chairman of the Flagstaff Bicycle Advisory Committee, although you're not here in that capacity. I want to note that, because we're going to talk about bikes.
That's right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the city of Flagstaff has a transportation commission, and then under that they have a pedestrian advisory committee and a bicycle advisory committee. I sit out as chairman on the Bicycle Advisory Committee, but I am just here representing myself today, not representing the city.
We're not making policy.
Not making policy.
We'll talk about policy. And yeah, you're an avid bike guy. You do mostly mountain biking, or you do everything?
I do everything, yeah. Yeah, member of Flagstaff Biking Organization and International Mountain Biking Association. And
sometimes you guys are like the mountain bike guys. I know Stuart McDaniel's a bike guy too, and you guys do some crazy stuff on the out there in the forest that I'm like, wow. It's like up there with skydiving. We were talking about that with Jerry Neighbors yesterday. It's just like things. I don't know. I'd never just racing down a mountain on a bike.
We joke. There's a few things you have to do in Flagstaff to be an official local. One is mountain bike.
I guess I'm not a local. Jeez.
The other is rock climb, and you've got to
I've
run.
I've done that before. It's been a long time.
You've got to run Imogene. There's a few things you have to do to be.
Yeah, I guess local. I'm an abnormal local. But I we also were joking at the break, scrolling up versus scrolling down. Like, I scroll up to scroll down, and you're saying there's two people in the world.
There's two types of people in the world. Those that have their mouse set up when they pull down on the little ball on the mouse, the screen goes up.
Whole studies on that.
And then people like me who actually fix that problem in the computer and make it scroll
and
the way
go
it should.
Mountain biking down a road and at high speeds down a mountain.
That's right.
On a dirt road, yeah. All right, folks, love your comments. I'll try to get to some text comments in the next segment, so keep those coming. 877-971-3971. The Just Wireless text and listener line. Love to hear from you. 877-971-3971. A show notes. We were working on getting Mayor John Moore of Williams on the program, and I told you last hour about a proposed development out in Williams. Mark, it's like 500 acres, maybe 1,000 homes that may happen starting in like 2022, and possibly a Jackalope Park. Let me get this name right. It's a theme park that they're talking about out there. Jackalope Junction.
So I've been to Arizona a few times, and I love it. Awesome. We go out there. And, I think Williams is going to really be an up-and-coming place. In the past, what's really kept that town from developing has been water.
Water. It's a big problem.
Big problem. They had to put a moratorium on building to some degree because of the water problem. But I think they've got a lot of that resolved.
And let me put that down as a note, because we're going to get Mayor Moore today, but it looks like it'll be tomorrow on Friday's show. So I will put water. Have you solved? Because one of the things in Jackalope Junction would be a possible water park.
Ooh.
Which I'm kind of surprised we don't have in this for the summer up here. South Dakota, Rapid City has one. I've been to one in Salt Lake City, and a lot of them are outside and they're seasonal. Yeah. But man, with all the tourists, the way they recycle water now, they keep running it through the system.
Keep running through, and maybe you can make it a bobsled hill in the wintertime when it freezes.
Or mountain biking. Shoot a mountain bike down that thing. Yeah, so anyway, we'll have Mayor Moore on tomorrow, and I think we'll have Gerald Salente from Trends Journal and Glenn Least from WT Wealth Management, so that would be a busy show as well. Okay, Mark, horrible tragedy this past weekend in Flagstaff. I haven't followed it too much with everything going on, but I wanted to talk about it. What happened in Flagstaff?
Okay, so I don't want to overcomment because there's still an investigation happening as to exactly the details, but basically, at the corner of Butler and Beaver, six cyclists were hit by a guy that was driving a tow truck pulling a moving van behind him. Mm-hmm. And he ran the red light and killed one of the cyclists and put four others in the hospital, four or five others. I forget the exact number.
Yeah.
And they got pretty serious injuries, lots of broken bones. Not all the names have been released yet.
Sure, yeah.
But, the whole the bicyclists were out there as part of a group of 60 to 70 people that were out on a safety advocacy ride, basically, with Flag Bike Party. And they weren't doing anything wrong. They had some of them were wearing, bright clothing. Some even had safety cones on their helmets just to make a point about safety.
Sure. Keep an eye out. The bright vests, things like that, right?
Yeah. And so, visible. It was near dusk. And, the investigation will kind of clear up some of the issues, but it's an accident that should not have happened. And I don't know what happened in this accident, but we do know most accidents have to do with distracted drivers and intersections.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the statistics, I believe it's 2/3 of accidents in Flagstaff between pedestrians or bicyclists and vehicles happen at intersections. A lot of times that's cars running red lights or making a right turn or left turn without seeing the bicycle or pedestrian.
Let me ask you this, because I see a lot of talk about separating the lanes. I think Vice Mayor Adam Schimone, who's another big bike guy, I think he had a repair shop or has one for bikes as well. He was talking about separate lanes to try to get the bikes away from the cars. I don't know if that's really possible, though, Mark, because that's a major undertaking, and do you even have the land to do that?
Yeah, so there's several types of bicycle infrastructure. There's the bike lanes, which we've probably all seen, a little striped lane on the right side of the roadway where bicyclists ride.
Just a couple feet right next to where cars are going by.
Yeah, really. Current state law only requires cars to give bicycles 3 feet of space, which is not a lot. You know, especially I drive a big truck for work, and between my mirror and a bicycle's handlebar, 3 feet is not a very comfortable feeling for the bicyclist.
And can you really do that? Not in Flagstaff, but I was going the back way down to Camp Verde, where you go down Lake Mary Road, and then you after Lake Mary Road, the road that heads towards Payson, was that 87? Yeah, and there was a guy on a bike. There was no shoulder. Maybe it was like 6 inches, so he's kind of in the lane. I think I was towing a trailer at the time, and then there's cars coming the other direction. There's no way I can give 3 feet. I would have to hit the car on the other side. What are you supposed to do in that situation? And should a person even be biking in that scenario?
Okay, so under state law, the bicycle has right to as much of the lane as they need.
Okay.
So if they need to take the entire traffic lane to be safe, they can do so.
So you got
to
slow down and just
Wait until you can pass, just like you would with a car that was going too slow. You have to wait and be able to pass safely. The bicycle is supposed to ride as far right as is safe for them, but if there's cinders or glass or tire shards on the side of the road, they have the full right to move over and take as much of the lane as they feel they need to.
Okay, so you slow down, you're doing 20 miles an hour or whatever.
Yep.
The bike's going, could be slow up a hill. What about when you have, I see sometimes when there's a bike lane and someone's driving in the traffic lane, I see that a lot on like Route 66 or 89 or whatever, and there's two lanes for presumably cars, but there's also a full bike lane, but then there's a bike riding in the lane of traffic. I guess that's allowed, but what do you say about that?
That is allowed. Sometimes the bike lanes have issues. Cinders aren't cleaned up yet, and they're just loaded up heavy in the bike lane, so the bicyclist is forced into traffic lanes. In the wintertime, this is really bad because the snow berm sits in the bicycle lane half the time.
Yeah, I don't get that, yeah.
Right, and a lot of times the what we call the gutter, which is that little bit of concrete that matches up to the asphalt, has a big crack in it.
Okay.
And if you get stuck in that rut with your bicycle,
wipe it out.
You can wipe out and get seriously injured. So, yes, and cars, if you're driving a car, that can be classified as a deadly weapon. If you hit somebody with a car, you can be charged with manslaughter, assault. So you got to remember that. And a bicycle doesn't have that weight. If somebody gets hit with a bicycle, that's going to be very minor, if any, injury or damage.
To the vehicle.
To the vehicle. Yeah, or even
but
to
the
a pedestrian.
Bicyclist, it could be slow speed.
Yeah.
And it could be a fatality.
Right.
You're 6,000 pounds versus
yep.
human weight and a little bit of bike weight.
And we all know, road rage
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
And, you got to remember, when you get behind a vehicle, that car weighs anywhere from 4,000 to 7,000 pounds. And it's a big responsibility. And
I think your truck is like 9,000.
Yeah, I drive a diesel truck for work. I'm an avid bicyclist and want to save the environment, but also run a construction business.
It's good.
But,
it's a balance. It's about balance.
But you get behind the wheel and you have to be responsible. And remember, this is a big responsibility. You're driving what could kill somebody and you have to be careful with it. But there are a lot of things the city could do to increase bicycle safety.
Yeah, hit on that. Yeah.
The Flagstaff is developing, and this is part of what we talk about in the Bicycle Advisory Committee, what's called an Active Transportation Master Plan, which is overall development of bike lanes, sidewalks, bridges for pedestrians, crossings, all the infrastructure for bikes, pedestrians, and then also for buses, basically anything that's not a car. And so as part of this, we went before the City Council to request about $120 million for the next 20 years to complete the infrastructure that's necessary. So of that $120, $25 million, we only got about $29 million. So we're about $100 million short to...
For 20 years, you said?
The 20-year...
Of projects. So you're getting half million a year.
Million point something a year.
Or a million, sorry.
Yeah. And to give you an idea, what we call the FUTS Trail, the Flagstaff Urban Trail System, to build 1 mile of that is about $1 million. So we're getting about $1 million a year to do things. And... that can get you 1 mile of FUTS Trail, maybe a little bit more.
Which is like the urban trail for walking and biking.
And biking.
And e-bikes, apparently.
Yeah, and this is, it's separated. And if you have enough of it, bikes don't even, and cars don't have to be in the same area anymore. Because if you can be on a bike trail or a cycle track, you're away from traffic altogether.
Which I think would be more enjoyable thing
for everybody.
Situation for everybody. You yeah. want to enjoy that. Hey, real quick before I move on, are those bike lanes? You know, there's a lot of these e-bikes that are going on. More and more people are adding the little motors to the bikes and things like that. Can you ride on the bike lanes on those?
Yes,
because they don't go very. They top out at under 25 or something, don't they?
Yeah, not very fast. A real quick summary: there's three classes of e-bikes: class okay. 1, 2, and 3. Class 1 and 2 top out at 20 miles per hour. I mean, if you can pedal faster, fine. But as far as the motor helping you, it stops at 20. And then there's class 3, which goes up to 26 miles per hour.
Oh, okay.
After that, you're an electric motorcycle. Okay. So then you're into full automobile rules.
Yeah, you can't ride on the...
Can't ride in the bike lane. You can't ride on the sidewalk.
Okay, all right.
In Flagstaff, on the urban trail, you can ride with class 1 or class 2.
Okay.
There's some objection to class 3 because they're faster and...
Yeah, 4 miles, I guess.
Yeah, 26 yeah. miles okay. per hour down the urban trail. So,
all right. Okay, so bottom line here, you got to watch it out there. I mean, it's, and we don't know what happened with this. All the details will come out, but we do know this, we're not saying that this is the case in this incident, but we do know distracted driving is a big component of a lot of accidents nowadays, I'd say. I mean, all the time. How many times are you at a light and you're like, and I'd rather have people do this at a light, checking their phone when it's red, but you know, it turns green.
Yep.
And you're like, come on, go, because they're doinking they're around, texting, but it's yeah. happening. I see people all the time. It's a huge issue. Yeah. It will continue to be. Are we going to have more devices or less devices going forward? The bikes will probably have the devices on them. They probably already do.
So two important points on that. One is, first of all, hands-free driving is law in Flagstaff.
True.
Well, in all
the state, right?
In the yeah. statewide. Yeah. So if you're texting and driving, you are breaking the law.
Yeah.
Even if you're sitting at the red light.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. You're not.
So don't take my advice. I give no legal advice here, folks. So, I'm just saying I'd rather have them do it there than
while they're actually
Yeah, although moving. You, according to Mark, you are breaking the law, but
yeah,
at least you're sitting still. It is.
Yeah, so don't text
don't
and drive.
Do it. Yeah, don't do it.
And the other thing is, you know, a lot of the new cars, I just bought a new truck,
yeah.
and it's totally hands-free. You set your phone down, and it...
Yeah. That's like a coffee maker in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, just about, you know. And that's one of the really benefits of new cars. You know, you got the backup cameras, you've got the hands-free
yeah.
all built in, which are all safety features. But when you go to buy a new car in Arizona, you get penalized because the newer the car is, the more tax you pay, not just sales tax, but the registration.
Oh, the registration fee, yeah, yeah.
You know, my registration fee on my truck, $1,000 a year.
Oh, my God.
You know, Ooh. And... from a person who wants to save the environment, and I'm not a left-winger or anything, but... Wouldn't it make more sense to charge registration fees based on how badly your car is polluting rather than how much it costs new?
Oh, yeah, I've got some cars from the 90s. I mean, yeah, the registration is ultra cheap.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I just did fix an exhaust leak, though, so I'm getting better with the environment. You know, I got my wife just got a Mini. Well, Mini Cooper.
Oh, nice.
And we have mostly big vehicles, so this is off the show it to you. But it's a fun, and the gadgets in there, though, are tremendous. There's all kinds of, and this is yep. a used vehicle. This is a couple years old. So
yeah, and my point was that by penalizing people for buying new cars,
yeah.
we're missing out on the safety features that come with new cars, like the hands-free and the sure. cameras and all sure. this, and the, you know, the crash avoidance systems. Shouldn't we be encouraging people to buy newer cars and getting the old ones off the roads that aren't as safe?
I guess. Although I think there's too many gadgets. There's so many avoidance things, and you're like,
just turn it off.
People got into my old cars that are driving new cars, they probably crash because they don't have... You actually can't. If you change lanes, you will hit someone without the collision avoidance thing. All right. Let's move on because we are getting tight on time. Just be safe out there, folks, and let's see what happens here with the development of the details on this issue. And just watch those folks on bikes, especially summertime now coming up. You're in the construction industry. You've been busier than heck all over northern Arizona, Mark. And we've seen lumber prices go up tremendously. A sheet of OSB is over $50, right?
Oh, no, it's more than that. It's over 70 now.
Wait, just like half inch?
Half inch OSB, yeah. I just went to
my God.
Builders First Source locally.
Yeah.
They're not a sponsor or anything. But
Homeco is.
But Homeco is. Yeah. And I shop at Homeco normally, but
yeah.
I happen to be in the other guys.
Yeah.
And I asked them, what are you charging for a sheet now of half inch OSB? And they're like, I think they told me $76.
Oh, my God. Last time I checked, it was $50, but it was like $15.
It's going
last up. Year, $12-15.
It's been going up every week, in the last couple of weeks, $10 a week.
Are you writing in your contracts, like, if it's a couple months out that there's an escalator, that, hey, it has to, you have to protect yourself, right?
Yeah, and we basically tell the people we can only guarantee your lumber price for 7 days.
This is like a Zimbabwe menu, you know, they used to like cross it off by while you're eating. You'd want to prepay for your steak back. With that kind of inflation. So that's kind of that situation now. And it just keeps going up. I had heard that it was like $36,000 extra. This was like a month or two ago to build a home, just in lumber costs. It's probably more now.
Yeah, that's true nationwide. But of course, Flagstaff is more expensive.
We're special
on everything. So if it's 36,000 nationwide, then you can expect about 60,000 here. You know, it's gone through the roof. And, you know, people, what's happening is the lower class or the poorer people in the country, if they don't already own a house,
they're getting locked out.
They're locked out. Yeah. They cannot get into it.
Because you don't qualify. Okay, it goes up. If you're a dollar over what you qualify for, you're locked out. If they say, hey, you can afford $1,500 per month.
Yep.
It went up to $1,700 because the house cost $40,000 more, $36,000 more because of lumber prices.
Yep. And we talk about the used real estate market being so high. And part of what's driving that is the cost to build a new house is so much higher.
So people are looking at older houses.
Houses, and that just forces
it. Follows the market.
Yeah.
Do you get those texts, I want to buy your home right now?
Oh, texts,
it's
calls,
unbelievable.
Letters.
Yeah.
You know, I've got real estate agents right now, you know, begging to buy one of my houses.
Can I buy? Yeah. And, yeah. You know, I always just text back, just send a check for $2 million.
Yeah. And you're going to regret that. Reply. You'll regret that in a couple of weeks because it won't be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You
know, they talked about the inflation on lumber was 275%. On average,
unreal
across the country. It's been higher here locally, of course, and you know that really kills the cost of a house.
Okay, so now you have Canada, which is a big supplier of lumber. A lot of trees up there, and
ooh, you're getting me mad now because we are in Flagstaff, Northern Arizona. We are in the largest ponderosa pine forest in the world.
Yeah,
and we don't log.
Not very much. Nothing significant. Used to. You probably can't use that kind of pine for like the 2x4s and stuff.
Oh, sure. You can.
Could you?
Yeah, a lot of the old houses here are built out of.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I've complained about this in the past because I've owned some very old homes and I talk about downtown Flag that was built in a lot of places, late 1800s, early 1900s, when there was like no building department.
Yep.
And they say, this won't stand up. And somehow these buildings still stand. And if you have a home that's definitely maybe World War II or earlier, and I've done a lot of remodels where you open it up and you find the true 2x6 or 8 or 10 or whatever.
It's actually two inches.
Yeah. You always wonder what happened to the extra half inch, right?
It became drywall.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could use that for that. But you could also, there's a lot of material that you could use for the chipping and making the OSB type products.
Yep.
The remnants, basically.
And there was even a proposal to make an OSB plant here locally, and that got shot down. You know, every good idea gets shot down.
It drives me crazy because we have people talk about sustainability, and then you and I, who will be labeled as right wingers, and we hate the environment. That you're a bike guy, and I'm a chicken guy. We have chickens, and we don't get any credit for that, but that's okay. Don't forget before you leave, get some eggs.
Oh, those, eggs are the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially now with meat shortages and things like that, you don't know what's going to happen.
A whole other story.
But here we are. We have the opportunity to harvest wood within our own forest, and we don't. And the forests are overgrown. Also harvesting it for firewood.
Yep.
But we discourage the use of wood stoves and fireplaces because it puts smoke in the air. Same thing as a forest fire if you don't take it out. The policies are totally contradictory. Oh, we don't want a pipeline in the United States because we don't want to get the Arctic. We'd rather get it from have big tankers coming across the ocean from the Middle East.
Because that's better for the environment.
For the environment. But the tariffs now, you got Canada, which has a lot of lumber. They said they're dumping or something, which I don't. If they were dumping, wouldn't you see, it wouldn't be $70 a sheet.
Yeah.
So let's double the tariffs. This is not going to help. This is going to make the situation worse.
No, and tariffs are a tool in the government's toolbox to prevent unfair things like China, you know, ripping off U.S. companies by actually stealing their technology.
Yeah, intellectual property rights. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, with Canada, most of our lumber has been coming from Canada for a number of reasons. One, we don't have enough lumber mills. And a part of that is driven by the EPA and the Sierra Club.
Of course.
And everybody not wanting to cut down our forest, and now they're overgrown. And now we're actually paying, local city of Flagstaff is actually paying millions of dollars to logging companies to cut down our forest because they're overgrown.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's, you know, getting burnt. We had that big burn on Mount Eldon where the log piles caught on fire. Anyway, This is really driven by greed in the American logging companies. They can't keep up right now with the demand that we have, and yet they want to shut out Canada. And the whole purpose is so they can be more profitable than they already are, and they are ridiculously
profitable. It's probably quite profitable now. It's a supply and demand issue.
Yep. I actually bought stock in one of the bigger lumber companies in America, and it's gone through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you not? I mean, I wish I had bought a warehouse full of 2x4s and 2x6s.
I know, you'd be retired.
A year ago. And yeah, and sheets of OSB, but who the heck knows this stuff? All right, Mark, thanks for the updates. Let's get you back on again next week. And then I'm going to talk to you off air because I'm going on vacation. So we'll get you on again when I'm on vacation as well. Yep. And
I think we forgot to mention, actually, what is happening is Biden is saying let's tariff Canada
at
twice the current rate.
Yeah, and I talked about it yesterday with Jerry Neighbors. I forgot to mention. Yeah, of course, we got to double that.
Yeah,
It's make lumber more
expensive.
More cheaper. We're going to make it cheaper by taxing it. Everything you tax gets cheaper.
Yeah. In somebody's world.
I don't know. Mark, appreciate it. Be safe out there, folks, with the bikes, and maybe you'll see Mark out there as well. Do you do the orange vest?
I do not do the orange vest, okay. But, you know, use the lights at nighttime and the red flasher behind me and stuff.
Yeah, good. That's good advice. All right, folks, hang tight. Coming back with your comments. Go ahead and text those in, 877-971-3971. Back in a minute. Welcome back. I started off the program talking about the pressure, if you missed this, on Senator Kyrsten Sinema here in Arizona and Joe Manchin, Senator Manchin of West Virginia, too. They both have held firm that they're not going to support ending the filibuster, which if they end the filibuster, then they can pass anything. They can get everything through, including nationalizing our elections. They want to take away gun rights. You know that's going to happen. Probably a national $15 an hour minimum wage. On and on. There's tremendous pressure. It seems that Senator Sinema is holding her own, despite lots of folks bombarding her to do otherwise. And one of the folks who wants her to change her ways and end the filibuster is former Flagstaff City Councilwoman Eva Putsova, who I hear, has there been an official announcement? I think she wants to run for Congressional District 1 again for the Democrat nomination, probably against Tom O'Halloran, Congressman O'Halloran, if he runs again. I've heard other names as well. As you know, on the Republican side, you've got Representative Walt Blackman running for that position. You've got Mayor John Moore of Williams, who, by the way, I had kind of some scheduling issues earlier. We had Victor Riches from the Goldwater Institute, and we had Mark Howitt at the same time. So sometimes I do that, but Mark does a great job at helping with the interviews. So had a good time with Mark and Victor Riches. So we've moved Mayor John Moore to tomorrow's program, but he's running for CD1 Republican nomination. But anyway, Eva Putsova tweeted, "I just want to apologize to this country." This was earlier today. "On behalf of Arizona voters, we were reckless electing at Senator Sinema. It won't happen again." So there you go. So my point being, you got to keep emailing. If you want to keep the filibuster, if you don't want nationalized elections controlled by Washington, D.C., same-day registration and on, if you want your gun rights preserved, if you don't want the federal government dictating $15 an hour minimum wage for every community in this country, I would suggest sending Senator Sinema a message. Google Senator Sinema, call her office, or send her an email, because she's getting tremendous pressure, and that's going to keep up. While you're online, or just envision this. This is a good one. The world's just gotten crazy. This is on hypebeast.com. I think we pulled it off maybe Drudge Report, the link. Italian artist Salvatore Garou has just sold an invisible sculpture for $18,000. So apparently this guy sold this sculpture. The artist explains it exists, but just not in material form. and is actually more like a vacuum. 67-year-old went on in the to elaborate that the vacuum is nothing more than a space full of energy, and even if we empty it and there is nothing left, according to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that nothing has a weight, therefore it has energy that is condensed and transformed into particles, that is, into us. So somebody paid $18,000 for this Italian artist's invisible sculpture. So, okay, here's what I'm doing. I've just conjured up a Jeff Horvitz Show sculpture. I don't want $18,000. Send a $100 bill, and I will ship I'll include the shipping of the invisible, because it doesn't weigh much. It doesn't weigh much. So I just made an invisible sculpture here. A $100 bill. You can send it to the Jeff Horvitz Show. 2532 North 4th Street, number 118. Flagstaff, Arizona, 86004. I'll only do 10 of these, though. We'll label them so you can tell the difference. I'll do 10 invisible sculptures for $100 each. This is as bad. This is even worse than that. What was that thing called? The non-fungible tokens, where they would take something like a video that somebody did a long time ago or a painting, and they would digitize it, you know, make a copy, a digital copy, but they would assign it to like blockchain technology, and it is the original digital copy. It's number one. All the other copies that are exactly the same, they're not the same. and some of these were selling for millions of dollars. This is usually, in my opinion, the sign of a top when it comes to insanity and markets. Your thoughts, text the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. Before I run out of time, let's get to a couple of text messages. Do you think the Flagstaff Green New Deal will have a real impact on Flagstaff? Yeah, absolutely. And the Flagstaff Green New Deal is going to be voted on here in the next couple of weeks. So far, only one of the seven council members seems to be against it, Regina Salas. She came on the program talking about it. And they want to retrofit like half the residences to get them away from natural gas, to electrify them, and on and on. Yeah, I think it's a real deal. Some people have said, well, but they're not going to have the money to do it. Well, they're going to try to tax the heck out of you to make it happen. It's one of their big goals. Here's another text. Isn't it better that families get tax dollars back through what you call universal basic income child tax credit versus corporations getting dollars back or not paying taxes at all? Well, I don't like either one. the child tax credit, which begins, I think, next month. If you have a kid under 18, you get, $250 per kid. If they're like under six, I think you get $300. There's some income thresholds, but something like 88% of American families will be getting a monthly check, what I call universal basic income, just because you have a kid. That's going to be coming. No, I'm totally against that. I think it's a horrible idea. I'm also against, though, the corporations that figure out a way to get money back from the taxpayers, pay nothing and get money back. No, we shouldn't be doing any of this. And we should shrink the size of the government overall so we don't need to collect more taxes from anybody. No, we shouldn't be redistributing money. Absolutely not. I'd love your thoughts. That's a couple of them. I will try to get to more tomorrow because we are just about out of time. So keep those text messages coming. And you can text the Just Wireless listener line anytime. I love hearing from you. Keep them coming. 877-971-3971. 877-971-3971. And no, you don't need to send me a $100 bill. I mean, unless you really want to. But it is beautiful, invisible artwork that I created, just like this Italian artist, for $18,000. So I don't know. I think it's beautiful art that's invisible and only worth $100. But maybe we start a bidding war. I'll send it in a maybe a little case that's empty. It's not empty. It's just invisible. Oh, man, what are they going to think of next? All right, don't forget to go to talkwithjeff.com and subscribe to the podcast. Click on how to listen. Subscribe to it. I'd love you to share that with your friends as well. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for today. Tomorrow we're going to start at 4:06. Glenn Least is going to give us a market update. Also, I think we're going to hear from the publisher of the Trends Journal, his once a month visit, give us a bunch of updates. Gerald Celente. Who else? Oh, we're going to talk with the mayor of Williams, Mayor John Moore, regarding this big project going on out in Williams. And keep your comments coming, 877-971-3971. Text them in. Have a great, safe night. I'll see you tomorrow at 4:06.